Hey, it's Steve Cochran, and this is live from my office. Actually, right now, I'm live in my car. You know, my swinging, swirling world never stops. I'm on the radio every morning from 5:30 to 9 on WLS. You can hear it anywhere in the world. You stream it anywhere you want on any smart device, even some devices that are not so smart. And I hope you'll listen. And as part of that, we've been celebrating the 100th anniversary of WLS Radio. And for those of you who can pick up what we still call radio, it's on the Big 89 WLS every morning from 5:30 to 9. One of the guys that's a huge part of the history of WLS is Ro Khan. Ro Khan has since gone on, host radio and TV, to be a Cook County officer. He's an executive, he's fighting carjackings, he's doing all sorts of stuff now. But it's really cool because he's working to make his town, Chicago, better. He can talk about WLS, he can talk about some drama behind the scenes, he can talk about when we were all making better money before all this turned into a carnival, and he's going to do it all here, and I'm looking forward to having you hear it. 100 years of WLS continues with my conversation with Ro Khan on this episode of Live From My Car. This part's in the car. The rest was in the office.
It is great to see Ro Khan live here at WLS. Again, do you get a weird feeling when you walk into this building, even though technically you never broadcast from here?
It's everywhere that has the call letters up. I get a feeling. I get all the feels, Steve, as
really?
I could say.
Yeah. Are they the big feelings, as
yeah,
we say?
Right. Well, it's the Big 89. That's why they're the big feelings. Yeah, I know. I mean, it is such an important part of my life. I mean, it's probably the signature part of my life.
How many years?
25.
25 years.
Yeah.
All right, before we're done, we'll talk about what you're doing now, but I do want to go backwards here. How did you get into the mothership, WLS? What, were you an intern or what happened?
No, it's a great story. How many hours do we have, Steve?
Yeah, all you need.
All right, so I was working at WMAQ Radio.
Okay.
When I got out of college.
Sure.
I became a producer there, and I was producing for the late, great Don Vogel.
Sure.
Who was blind and since birth. And part of my job as his producer was to, you know, read him the newspapers in the morning. We would get in an hour earlier than, you know, most shows would for prep, and we would just go through everything. And we had so much fun. I would read, he would say something goofy, and I would respond.
Sure.
You know, we just automatically had that repartee. And it was off the air. So the whole idea was, you know, that it was just a way to have fun, do anything else.
It's like a baby eating vegetables. You didn't know you were getting good stuff because that's improv reps, and you didn't even know you were doing it.
Right. So, right, exactly. So we did it, and then one day, the program director was walking by and listening to it, and he goes, you know, put that guy in the air. Let's just, you know, and so they created this, you know, young punk producer role, and that was not uncommon at the time, right? It was the 80s. And so we did, and it took off. And then the morning host, Drew Hayes, who became the longstanding program
Drew Hayes
director.
Drew Hayes was on the air?
Yeah. Drew Hayes is the morning guy at WMAQ.
You know what Drew Hayes is also famous for? This quote. Yeah, I'm not a Cochran guy.
Yeah, well, he was intermittently a Ro Khan guy.
Get in line.
Yeah.
So Drew Hayes was on the air. He leaves the show?
He was on the air, and he sees me doing the show, and I didn't have, at that time, an AFTRA card, a union card.
Union violator.
Yeah. So then there was a strike of another union at NBC. And I didn't want to be a scab because it was very scary to be a scab.
Sure.
They wanted me to do tech work and stuff on the side, all the people who weren't in the union. So I joined AFTRA immediately. I scrounged up the $600 and I joined the union. And then I came back and I worked with Don until we were done with, you know, until NBC at the time sold that radio station.
Yep.
So flash forward, I leave that. I work at Westinghouse as a news producer. Then I go over to CBS to Channel 2 to be Walter Jacobson's producer.
No kidding. You're bouncing around for a bit. So what year are we talking?
This is like 80, 87, 88
so
into
you're
89.
25, no, 22, 3,
23, 4? 4. Yeah,
okay.
So So I get this call from Drew in 1989. They're going to, he's going to become the program director of WLS, and they're going to start an all-talk station. And he'd like to know if I'd like to audition. And I'm like, yeah, great.
Of course
you would. I was like, wow, that is so cool. Thank you. And I do. I come to find out he does it because he wants to tick off the guy, the blind talk show host, because he did not get the audition to come over.
Wow.
He was working in Milwaukee at the time. But it worked out. And you know.
So you got that gig off that audition?
Off that audition.
What show?
It was a weekend show.
Okay.
And I was still working at Channel 2. And this is also the story that is now legendary at Channel 2. That I went to my news director at Channel 2 and I said, hey, do you mind if I do this Saturday morning talk show on WLS?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll work Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday, whatever else you need here.
Sure.
And she's like, nope, that's ABC. We're CBS. Not going to happen.
So TV told you you couldn't be on radio.
Right.
Even though you'd had an opportunity to promote image wise, all that.
Yeah.
Well, just got in the way.
So I did it. I stopped. I stopped and I thought, well, what am I going to do? You know, I think 24. At this point.
Sure.
And I had a young baby at home and I had, and you know, you're not making any real money as a TV producer,
sure.
You know? And so it was like, I just needed the money and they were just paying me, you know, the hourly wage or whatever it was for the radio show. And I just did it for 6 months before they caught me.
Oh, you're kidding.
6 months using my own name.
They didn't even know.
So that's why they say, you know,
God, I love management.
Channel 2 News, if it happens in Chicago, it's news to us. That was the expression. So they finally, so then they called me into the general manager's office and he was like, listen, here's the deal. You got to do one or the other. There's no future in radio.
Oh.
So you really should come in and do just be a producer for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, I don't know. I kind of think, you know, like kind of doing my own thing. I go, if I'm going to stay here, I need to become a reporter. And he's like, no. And then I'm like, no. And
he literally told you no. There's no shot for you on camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, well, you're going to have to go down to, you know, some Harrisburg, Illinois, or, you know, one of those markets and then work your way back up. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I took the job at, so LS and Drew, who was great, made a,
you must have missed the part where I said he's not a Cochrane guy, but that's okay.
No, I mean, he and I have had our fights. We had our battles. I mean, especially during the Gary Meyer era.
Uh-huh,
it was pretty crazy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They made me like senior producer or something. So they gave me something to do until a show opened up. And then about a year and a half into that, a show opened up, the midday show opened up. And so I did 2 hours in the morning, 9 to 11 in the morning, and then 2 to 3 after Rush was done.
I didn't know that. So you had a split shift.
Split shift, yeah.
So now we're what, 90, 91, somewhere in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 90, 91. And then I stayed doing that until 1994.
Right.
I worked that shift and I would fill in. I was like the super sub, you know, I'd do the morning
Six
show.
Man. For, you'd do every show.
Right. For Donna Roma or for, you know, Bob Lasseter, who was the afternoon guy. And I was the exact opposite of Bob Lasseter, you know, thin voiced, the, you know, wimpy kid. And Bob Lasseter, you know, sounded like a howitzer every time he spoke.
Third testicle.
Yeah. That's what we called him.
Yep.
Three ball Bob.
Yep.
So I ended up then doing an OJ. I got really into the OJ trial.
Okay. I want to ask you about that because I remember this and I've heard people go, well, that was Roe's big break. I go, I wouldn't call it a big break, but it was a profile establisher like you wouldn't have had before. And now, as far as we know, you had nothing to do with the murders, right?
No, but I will tell you this story. At that time, my agent, who is a legendary agent from New York, who took me on as a young punk kid also, and was like, Bobby Dowling, sweetheart, listen, we're going to make you into something, a gigantic star. And I ended up going on all these auditions for, at that point, like every young radio talk show. So I was getting a TV talk show.
Yeah,
Kenny Bonaducci,
exactly. Sure.
Charles Perez, you know.
I had development deals with all three networks.
Right. Yes. And I had, so I was at, I went out to do an audition with Carney Wilson for Warner Brothers Telepictures. And I'm out in LA and I'm meeting, you know, with her and her managers and all that. And we're, you know, we're setting up the pilot and the, I get on. And so they were done with the meeting. And I think it was at that point they decided they were not going to hire me after this, you know, like our second or third meeting.
Sure.
So they sent me home early. So I was supposed to be on like the 8 o'clock flight out of LA back to Chicago.
Right.
And I ended up actually on like the 5 o'clock flight out of Chicago.
Did you know there was no shot at that point, or you just thought?
I did when I landed, and there was no car to come pick me up. That's how I knew. But had I gotten on the 8 o'clock flight, that would have been OJ's flight.
Oh, come on, really?
Yes. So at that point, I'm like, oh my god, what a quick brush with like infamy.
Wow.
Right there. And I was like, oh wow,
how do I not know that? I never knew that story.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. So I ended up just becoming so immersed.
Sure.
In that case.
Sure.
I think just because of that.
Well, but you also have to be old enough to remember what that case did to the country.
Right.
Because it changed everything.
Yes, it did. So I ended up getting a network show out of it. I ended up getting ABC Radio News.
Every night.
Created a nightly broadcast based on the ABC News primetime model and that branding. So we were radio primetime. So I did that for the entire OJ trial. And I met all the producers, and we did it with Court TV. And, you know, I guess like all those people who are now on Fox and everywhere else were from Court TV.
Yeah.
There's like the OJ babies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Because it birthed the nation.
Yeah.
Now, you from that show popped up on all of the 24-hour nets as well,
yeah,
right? Because they needed the experts and the people that were talking it.
Right.
Inside Out.
And even before that, I don't know, the Larry King guys took a liking to me at some point.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And
yep.
I was doing a lot of Larry King and even before OJ and then during OJ. As a matter of fact, the day of the Slow Speed Chase, Tevis Smiley and I were both on CNN and we were doing like live hits on OJ that morning. Tevis and I talk about this all the time. It was like, we're sitting there and all of a sudden we get this call. He's missing. Was what the phone call was.
Right, right.
So I rushed back to the station, and they were like, don't worry about it. And I, this is also a really amazing story. This is a Friday, as people will remember. I didn't work that night for the Slow Speed Chase because I wasn't really, you know, I was only personally into it at that point. Nobody knew, like, my passion about it. And my Saturday morning show started at 6 a.m. I had never, ever, ever overslept that alarm, except for that morning. The Saturday after the Slow Speed Chase. And
pretty important to be on the air that day.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most consequential thing that had happened, like mm-hmm. in my entire radio career it just happened. So my producer was running a tape, a reel-to-reel tape from the day before of me talking. And it was like for 8 minutes. And then I get in, I sit down, and I do that point. Steve, you know the point.
Sure.
And I just pick it up on the sentence.
Yeah.
And
So
I end up saying, you know what I mean? And then I pick it up with, but let's talk about what happened last night.
Wow. Well done.
And then we just rolled right into that. And I never looked back. It was just.
Okay. So out of that, when does the afternoon? Wait, hold on a second. Were you doing the show from LA or from here?
No, we did it from here. We did it all. We did it like. June Grasso, the ABC show was June Grasso in New York, me here.
Okay.
And then we went to LA for a week and then I went to New York.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right, so at some point the afternoon guy leaves. Who is doing afternoons before you?
Well, actually, there was Al and or Ed were doing afternoons.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point Bob Custra, the former lieutenant governor of the state of Illinois, got offered the afternoon show.
Really?
And then, but they didn't put me, and I was the guy that brought him to WLS. I used to do Ask the Lieutenant Governor. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was ironic, but they apparently thought it was real.
It's a funny idea.
Yeah. So so I thought we were going to get the afternoon show together. We didn't. They gave it to him. But then the governor, Jim Edgar, had like a little heart thingy that mm-hmm. happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob was like, oh my God, I think I could become governor. And so he stayed there at the governor's, you know, as lieutenant governor, sure. And they hired Alander Ed. That didn't work very well. Drew Hayes, still program director, ran into Gary Meyer, who had been, I guess, 2 years then divorced from Steve Dahl. Mm-hmm. And they were like, he goes, let's try these two out. And we that first Saturday morning was like magic. It just clicked.
Well, here's the deal. In an effort of honesty and for the audience to understand, because they love the true WLS fans love to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff and get questions answered from forever ago. Mm-hmm. I always got along with Gary until I came back to WGN. And when I came back to WGN, he was no longer the big dog, and he got very personal and mm-hmm. and pouty about it. But he had been off the air prior to that for a number of years in a contract dispute where he left your partnership.
Yeah.
And you can talk as much about that or not at all. It's your call. But that was a huge story and a huge deal. Because yeah. at one point, I was on the air against you guys, and you were kicking my butt. Of course, that made me happy. And I thought, I got these guys. But you had this consistent, brotherly thing that you built on. I thought you were brilliant. I wouldn't have told you that at the time, of course. Hmm. And managing Gary in the process as well. And Gary was great in that second chair. So do you want to talk about the breakup or not?
Yeah. I mean, it's all, you know, sort of been out there. But there were a lot of misconceptions. It was a really, really, really hard time in my life because my agent and Gary's then agent, Todd Musburger at the time, very famous agent.
Yeah.
Brent's
brother.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. They were two, you know, wily professionals trying to work this deal out because we, you know, had been very successful in a year and a half run. And then we signed a four or five year deal prior to that. And I had signed it before Gary had signed it. And he was mad about that because I said, well, we're going to do this deal because there's no place else for us to go, really. And because at that point he thought we were going to go to another radio station, but I knew that was going to go all sports. And I'm like, I tried to explain that to him and he was like, no, we're going to, you know, we need to hold out.
Yeah,
and I kind of understood
timing,
the market.
The timing was the consolidation of the business.
Right.
And this was the last big money cycle.
This is the first deal that we signed. The second deal.
Got it.
Which was that the first deal we signed and he was upset about it. And his wife, who ended up becoming his agent, mm-hmm. was upset about it. Mm-hmm. And so
nothing about her. It's just not advisable.
So those 4 years were pretty rough, you know, in that period of time with us. But we got along great on the air, you know, and then off the air, it was like, he didn't understand that at the end of the day, I was setting us up to be, he wanted to jump at it and we would have gotten tossed out at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, and we were really had a momentum and WLS was really supportive and they had amazing, amazing promotion staff behind
yep.
us,
yep.
live shows,
yep.
traveling around the country, doing stuff around the Midwest, building a Midwest reputation and everything. It was such a great moment for us to set us up for the big payday. Cause at that point, ManCow, I think had signed some ginormous deal. And so we knew that that kind of money was existing in radio.
Right.
So we ended up for a year going to the final negotiation. Our deal ended in, our existing deal ended in 2004. So in all of 2003 into 2004, we were going to, you know, it was just negotiation, all the way up to Michael Eisner at Disney was involved in this negotiation. And
it was a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when Gary's wife became the agent, there was like a lack of communication between her and my agent and between her and the ABC executives that had become very tense. And they just started negotiating with us. And we're like, okay, we're going to just do this deal with you and you bring it to him.
Well, I mean, just this might get a little deep in the weeds, but at the risk of that, it's never a good idea to do a twin negotiation, in my experience.
It's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard. I mean, they had different needs than I had at the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we landed on finally a very, very big number, and we had like a weekend to go through it. And I sent the deal over to Gary, and he was like, it's just not enough time to go over the deal. We can't sign it right now. And they were like, okay, now or never. And they meant it at that point because they'd said that for 6 months. And we'd gotten through 6 months of now or never.
And it's completely fair at that point.
And at that point, it was a it was, and I'll be honest with you, it was stupid money. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, I couldn't believe it.
No, it pissed me off.
Yeah. And, and I'm like, no, you got to take it. You have to take this. And it just kind of broke down at that point. And then I took it and I gave us 48 more hours for him to come through and sign it. And he just didn't do it. Then he went on television and he said that I had stabbed him in the back and did all this stuff. But I literally delivered to him guaranteed money that approached, right. I mean, it was millions of dollars of guaranteed money. Millions of
dollars. And literally, and I'm not kidding, boys and girls, it's the last big money cycle.
It was the last big money cycle. I don't know that we knew that at the time, but what I did know was that no one else was making this money in Chicago, nope. And no one had ever made that money. No one had ever paid that amount of money for an afternoon show, ever.
And the idea that they were going to continue to allow two guys making that kind of money. Now, obviously, you were bringing it in. You had to pay your own way.
Right.
And you were still bringing it at that point. So the breakup happens, not Gary's first. Has there been any reconciliation through the years? No. You run into him at stuff? You ever talk to him?
I've run into him a couple times. He's not friendly.
Yeah.
And that's 20 years ago right now.
Yeah.
It's exactly 20 years ago.
Yeah, Gary has entitled his side of the story with you, with me, mm-hmm. with Steve, with everybody. Mm-hmm. But he makes it harder for himself. Now, you end up landing for a period of time after that with a friend of ours, very funny guy, because Bill Leff was next, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Bill Leff was great with you.
Great. Bill Leff is, I think you and I will agree, maybe the funniest person we know.
There's no question. And every time you talk to Bill Leff, you raise your own game. You don't even know what's in there, but you start playing riff tennis.
But you don't know where he's going to get you. He always wins every point, though.
Yeah.
Because he'll come in with something like a side shot or a low shot, and you're like, oh, wait a second. Where'd that come from? Yeah. You don't even see it coming because his timing is perfect.
Yeah. There's something wrong with him.
That's he's great.
He's brilliant and very, very funny. And I know you guys had a good run, but at some point Roper comes into the picture.
Well, yeah. And then WLS had sold, ABC had sold the station to another company. That company wasn't quite as financed at the level that I think they thought they were. They levered a little bit and they started like just cutting costs. So they cut Bill and we then ended up, I did the show for a while by myself. And then when Michael Damsky, who was this great general manager from WXRT, was just a spectacular dude. He came in and he was like, hey, I'm going to put this, you know, this band back together. I can't get, you know, we can't get Gary, but we could, you know, we'll find something to do. And Richard Roper was available. And Richard had been at WLS forever and ever, you know, on the FM side.
Yep.
And so it was Damsky's idea to like, hey.
Or weren't you guys friends too?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
professional
friends. You'd see each other and all that.
Yeah. We were sort of that generation, whatever that generation was, you know, of that, you know. So he, so Damsky's like, I want that show. So we put it together. And
it worked great.
And it did. And Bill ended up back with Wendy, Wendy Snyder, mm-hmm. That's, again, that was a magical pairing in and of itself, too.
Yeah.
And now Bill talks to a hand puppet every day.
And now Bill's on TV doing his thing. I mean, it sort of all works out. If you have talent, you're going to stay in the business and it's going to swirl that way. But you end up after that coming over to what was WGN. What it is now is hard to describe. But I was doing the morning show. Jimmy DeCastro, who you have the same kind of respect I have for him, the guy that created The Loop.
Yeah.
And brought Larry Word in.
Yeah.
Yep. So, and then you're doing afternoons, I'm doing mornings. And we had what amounted to 5 or 6 years of fun before the next group of geniuses came in and ruined it.
I will say, working for Larry and Jimmy was one of the... It's the highlight of my career in terms of that. I never had a management team that I had that just amazing amount, like awe that I was working for them. And Jimmy DeCastro specifically as a guy who served as a creative and he sort of became the showrunner for all of the, you know, the primetime shows on WGN at that point was like, it was just magic. Right. And we'd come in and he would just amp you up into things and always support you. And then if there had to be a moment, you know, where he had to have the conversation, put his hand either, you know, like on your shoulder. Sometimes he'd like grab your earlobe. I never understood that, but I was okay with it. And he would go, listen, like grab it, like you got to hear me here, kind of a thing.
Well,
it's
because
old school.
The two most consequential managers that got it, that got talent, were Jimmy and Larry was great too. Larry got talent like nobody else, but going backwards back to here, John Guerin.
Oh, yeah.
During the Rock era. Totally different types of people.
Totally.
But Guerin got it at a level that allowed that music radio era to blow up with the, you know, the most famous people to ever sit behind a microphone there.
I worked with Guerin a number of times. Like, he worked as a consultant for a short period of time here at WLS when I was there. But I would call him all the time.
Sure.
Our kids went to school together, actually.
Oh,
and
there
so,
you go.
I call him and say, you know, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? He was one of the... I mean, it just as a guy who would listen and be able to tell you immediately what's happening in a sentence, what's happening wrong.
Sure.
I mean, the guy was a genius.
Yeah, he totally got it.
He was a genius.
And he was 24, 25 when they started offering him. He's in New York and they offer him Chicago at like 25 years old to run it. And he walks in and it's funny because we talked to him for this 100th year anniversary series. And he, Landecker, Fred Winston, all those guys, they had no idea how big they were. No idea. Now it's all pre-internet, obviously.
Yeah.
But they just ruled the radio world and changed everything. They were the not ready for primetime players in radio.
Isn't that why these three call letters are the most important in radio history in North America?
I think so.
And I'll tell you a little quick aside. When I was at latter days at WLS, I had an opportunity to interview Elton John. He was coming to Chicago to do the Billy Elliot is his
I remember
stage
that.
Show.
Yeah, I remember that when he came through. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he did like two TV stations, like four print people and one radio station.
Yep.
So we got the interview. So we had to take our equipment over to the hotel where he was working out of and everything. And we set up, did the whole thing. I'm sitting across, you know, like just in two chairs and, he puts his hand on my knee and he goes, you know, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because WLS broke me.
Yeah, how about
they
that?
They made me what I became in North America.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Reginald Dwight becomes Elton John with the help of the Mighty Three, WLS.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, Dennis DeYoung will tell you the same story about Styx. And all of these guys that had an opportunity, Billy Joel coming through said, doesn't happen without LS and LS's support. So that's one of the coolest things about this place, because it starts out 100 years ago as this sort of mass appeal, big thing that's known mostly for the barn dance.
Right.
And then it sort of segues into this station for everybody, mm-hmm. trying to figure out what it is. And then when rock and roll breaks in the 60s, Biondi breaks the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that early 60s, can we get a little more reverb on it for the DJs, the whole thing that nicely segues into the rock era and music radio, WLS and Landecker and Lou Jack and all those guys.
And then Stephen Gehry.
That's exactly right. Stephen Gehry, a huge piece of it. And finally on to Don and Roma and the whole talk era. One of the things I think, and I've told you this a million times, but when you and I would see each other when we were competing against each other, I was always the cool guy head nod, because you would never admit back then that the guy at the other station was doing a good job. But I was always a fan, and I think one of the amazing things you did, you were that bridge. You're that bridge from that talk thing into that sort of loop feel hybrid where you and I could do something similar, and you could take a dreadfully serious interview and immediately segue into a guy that could do America the Beautiful and arm farts and do it in two segments back to back.
Thank you for saying that.
It was all about entertainment.
Yeah.
It was all about creating great content.
You and I are the same. We always want to make people laugh, not 100%. Make people mad.
But also know what you're talking about and deliver for this city. And that's really where I want to end on this for now, because I want you and Roper, if you would, to come in together and talk a little bit about your era together.
Yep.
But in the meantime, you're a kid in Chicago. You're growing up in Chicago. You love radio. Tell me some memories about LS or what made you lock into LS.
Okay. We don't have enough time for all of that, but I will...
Give me a few of your favorites.
These are my two favorite things. I remember Bob Surratt was doing an interview with Elton John.
Okay.
On, you know, some summer afternoon, 1974, 1975. I'm riding my little Schwinn fastback around the park I played in, and I'd gotten an AM radio for the handlebars.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah,
that's big.
And it was aerodynamic too, by the way, in case it was, you know, it was really something. And I couldn't wait for the interview. And I remember stopping, and we had a cinder track. You can actually see that park from this.
You could
from
spin
this studio.
Out on your bike.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And my friends were all like doing wheelies and spinning and stuff like that. I stopped and I'm just sitting there listening, just riveted to Surratt's interview and listening to this guy. You know, like Surratt's another one of those great talents where it's like you hear him and you just feel comfortable. You know, he's like a blanket and you just believe everything you're hearing.
Sure.
And he's talking, and Elton John has reverence for him. And I'm like, oh my God, that's my radio station.
Right.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. And then, you know, then whatever, you know, quarter century, 30 years later, whatever it is, you know, then Elton John's saying that to me, you know, that comes back around, total full circle. But then the other one was my parents moved. I grew up in apartment buildings in downtown.
Okay.
And they moved in like 1975 to this other building. I couldn't get AM radio in the building.
Instead of losing your mind.
I was like, what am I? I started to cry.
Right.
My first night there, I was crying, and they're like, oh, it'll be okay. And I go, no, I can't listen to WLS. You don't understand. You know, so I had to take a radio and like put it up against the window, and then it didn't even really work. It was too much steel or something.
Right,
it kind of worked, didn't work. And then I went over to LSFM, which then was WDAI, which is a rock station.
Yep.
And then, as you recall, that got immersed in controversy and some scandal. Mm-hmm. And then they became Disco DAI. And the young Steve Dahl was the morning guy on the Rock and Roll DAI before it went away. He was there for 6 or 9 months. And I remember listening to that guy going, that guy is revolutionary.
Yep.
And then he came back around. So, and then somehow I ended up, I cannot believe my incredible luck. I always say I'm the luckiest guy alive because I was able to be at the place that I revered and adored and lives. It's just a part of my body. As a matter of fact, in my new job in the sheriff's office, my radio call sign is 890.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. I didn't know you could pick.
I didn't. They picked it for me.
Oh, they did pick it for you.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, and I think it's important for people to hear that from you, from me, from anybody who does this, the honor of sitting behind a microphone and to be able to say 890 WLS, the big 890.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's still great.
Yeah.
Every morning I get up at 3:30. That's not the great part. And one of my favorite things is that first 5:30 big 89 WLS.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, when I first got here, they wanted to get away from the big 89. We weren't allowed to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, 890 talk radio or talk radio 890 or whatever it was at the time.
Definitely kill the imaging that made the place.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
It was not genius, but it would. But then at some point, somebody came along and said, you know what we got to do? There have been a couple like great program directors here over the years in the talk era that were like Mike Elder comes to mind. Just an amazing, amazing dude. But at some point, I don't remember, it was Mike that did it, but it was like, let's go back to Big 89. And I can't, the first time I got to say that,
it's the coolest.
I was like, oh my God, that was, and it was like 4 or 5 years into my career here.
Yeah.
You know, it took a while, but it was,
you also told me, that Lou Jack was good to you.
Yeah, he was. He was very nice to me. And he, with Jim Johnson, the great Jim Johnson, who was the legendary newsman here at WLS.
And a good friend of yours.
And a very dear friend. And I don't think I would have made it were it not for him here. I mean, he was the guy that really, you know, he shepherded me. And he was the guy that, he said, this is really great advice, I think, for people in any industry when they're starting, is don't inhale too deeply on this place. Don't inhale too deeply. Just take it one day at a time.
There you go.
You know? And he shepherded me through it. And he was really always my secret weapon on the air. Just an amazing, amazing, amazing dude. And I adore him and his whole family. And his daughter then became a broadcaster. His dad was a writer for the Sun-Times, or the Times, Chicago Times.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sun-Times. And then now his daughter had a 25-year career in television.
Yeah.
And maybe his grandson is going to have a career in it. So it's
like
a really, really cool thing. So the idea of being like a part of that, just amazing, the amazing history of arguably the most consequential radio station
yep.
in North America. And I think it's easy to make that argument. Maybe top three. I don't think anybody would take it out of the top three.
No, 100%.
You know?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I had a kid say this to me maybe a year ago, but it made me laugh because I've been on a few of these, but this one is special. And he said, well, you know, you should grade yourself. I go, are you on the Wikipedia page? If you're on the Wikipedia page for the station, you know, with all those legends and you get mentioned, there's some sort of like stamp of approval to that. And then, of course, he also brought up because, of course, people can write anything on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to have my Wikipedia page locked because somebody wrote something about what my work here that I they said that their mother-in-law died of a heart attack after a telephone call with me because I was so mean to her on the air, which, you know, me, I've never been mean to anybody, you know, on the air.
Nope.
And so it was like, and it was like a joke, but it like all of a sudden it like went like viral.
Of course it did.
So we had to get it taken off.
Kill the lady.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
What's the matter with these people?
Yeah, I know. But it is such an amazing run here. And I will not, I mean, it's always going to be, you know, WGN was a lovely radio station. Yep. And, yep. You know, legendary in its own ways completely. But either you were one or the other, right?
Sure.
You know, in this town. And WLS just is, you know, it sunk into people's hearts because it played the music for them. You know, it played the music that you know, people of our age or a little older and some a little younger that they grew up with, and it made an impact. And then we were listening to it on the AM, that tinny little thing. You might as well have been listening to it in a can.
And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Didn't matter. By the way, has anybody had a longer run than 25 years? As a primary host? I don't think so.
I don't know. Rush as a syndicated host.
Yeah, but a local? Sure. I don't think so.
I don't know.
I tell everybody, I know I catch it longer than I said I would, but tell everybody what you're doing.
I'm an executive with the sheriff's office. I run the carjacking and retail theft analytics teams, and the carjacking. I'm on the vehicular hijacking task force with Chicago Police, FBI, and Homeland Security, and Illinois State Police. Never forget.
So it's going to be a very busy year with what's going on with the convention, yeah. All the stuff that goes on in the summer, mm-hmm. NASCAR coming back. That's a lot, and we've talked about this before on the show, but I think it's amazing for people that were not aware. I think it's a testament to how much you love your city because this is not a boy's fantasy. Boy, it'd be sweet if I could be a cop someday.
Yeah.
You really want to help this city.
Yeah, I do. Well, thank you for saying that. That's the reason I'm doing it. And for anybody who does have that fantasy that, you know, like, oh man, it would be really cool to be a cop. You go do it for 5 minutes. And there's some incredible, cool things to it. There's no question about it. But it is really, especially in this environment now, politically and otherwise, legally, it is perilous. And not just for the danger on the street. That's the first level of peril. The second level of peril, which is right behind it, is the internal peril of if you do your job.
Yep.
And you do it well.
Yep.
And you do it right. And you want to stop the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you make any mistake in that process. You know, the system as it plays right now will come after you.
Right, which is insane.
You know, this state's attorney, the outgoing state's attorney, it indicted 9 police officers.
Right.
And not a single one of those cases took.
Yeah, they were doing their job. I had a lieutenant with the CPD who said, I used to leave the house in the morning and I'd be concerned about a high-speed chase. Maybe there'd be an accident. Maybe there could be some other way I could be hurt. Said, now I leave the house in the morning and I have to worry about being arrested for doing my job.
Right. That's true.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, it is. And so people, you know, and I always would say thank you to police officers when you see them. I did that forever. I've been on the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation since its inception in the mid-2000s. And I just, out of course, you know, course of habit, I would do it. And I did not realize until I did this how meaningful that is. I thought they probably are kind of annoyed by it because most people go, yeah, thanks, you know, like I do now if I'm in a uniform. And it's like, but it really means something, you know. It's embarrassing, you know, when you hear it, but it is, but, you know, you want the support of the community because if you don't have the support of the community, what are you doing it for?
Well, thanks for being here, man. Thanks for the work you're doing now, but thanks for celebrating the birthday of your place and mine, the Big 890 WLS.
Honor, Steve. Thank you so much for letting me do this.
Well, there you go. The good times continue. We still have many more big names to interview for the 100 years of WLS Radio. Oh, and next time we do this, Baseball Nerds Unite if we get closer to opening day, my pal Mike Farren from SiriusXM Radio and ESPN Baseball. Mike Farren's going to tell us all about everything going on in baseball. So, if you love baseball the way I do, you nerds are going to be able to nerd out on all the nerdy stuff that we talk to. We don't go into the analytics because that would make my head explode. And as I always say, nobody wants to clean that up. All right, I am literally sitting in the parking lot of my health club. I'm going in for a workout because, as you know, if you've seen the picture on the cover of this episode, this look doesn't just happen. It takes work. Thank you, Ross Cochran, for producing live from my office and for putting up with this slightly less than desirable audio in the beginning and at the end of this fabulous episode. And thank you, Rokan, for what you're doing for the city of Chicago now and for all the entertainment through the years. My name is Steve Cochran. And this is live from my office.
30 years plus on the airwaves, you have turned your dial to me. Now you're tuned into my podcast. It's live from my office, Steve. From Ithaca, New York, to Carolina South, W. Cochran Steve. From Minneapolis, and then Chicago twice, top-rated shows achieved. Sit back, relax, and now listen to my show. When or wherever you are, 'cause you're on the go. A-list celebs with some laughs and great info. Live from my office, the Steve Cochran Podcast Show.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
No better place to be.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Subscribe and like for free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Live from my office, Steve.
So glad you're with me. It's live from my office, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Live From My Office, a service of Monkey Run Productions. All rights reserved. The podcast is hosted by Steve Cochran, and it's mixed, edited, and produced by me, Ross Cochran. Steve is available for corporate speaking gigs. He would love to MC your event. And occasionally, he's funny. Thank you for listening. Head to CochranShow.com for more.